Hello and welcome to another episode of This Is Hate CD. My name is Jerry Scullion, and in today's episode I'm diving into a conversation with Graham Nolan, the head of design for Accenture Song in Ireland. We're going to be discussing Accenture Trends Report, which, as many of you know, is an annual report that's been created for the last 16 or 17 years, I believe. And we're particularly going to be focusing on the role of generative AI. Now, we're exploring both the benefits and the challenges, from responsible data usage to governance. So we'll discuss how organizations and individuals can benefit from having their own localized AI. Now, we highlight the critical importance of understanding AI's impact on trust, ethics, and brand creation. It's fascinating to see how AI is transforming tasks like search, turning traditional search bars into something that's a little bit more efficient, and also that gives us the power of having some conversational tools. We're going to be revolutionizing customer service, really trying to understand, should I say, revolutionizing customer service and the interactions that surround those customer service and interaction touch points. Now, despite the fears of AI replacing jobs, we discuss really what it's more likely to do in terms of automating the tasks, freeing the employees for better use of their time and more strategic and creative efforts, which most businesses out there are really interested in doing and enabling. Now, another interesting point in this conversation is the apparent lack of customer obsession in many organizations that was identified in the trends report. And this was reflected in practices like shrinkflation, which I hadn't heard of before, reduced staffing and surge pricing, pushing the boundaries of customer forgiveness. So surge pricing, something that we've heard quite a lot about in Ticketmaster over the last couple of years in particular. So we discussed that in a little bit more detail. Now, Accenture Ireland is always on the lookout for talented designers and hosts a vibrant design chapter connecting designers across the company. I do work with Accenture Song. I'm not getting paid for this episode, but they are a client of mine. So I really believe in a lot of the themes that have come out of the trends, especially this year's trends, because I think it's a fantastic addition. The trends report is now available to download digitally, and encourage you to connect with Graham on LinkedIn for more insights if you want to discuss anything more about this. Stay tuned as we unpack the evolving trends and discuss what organizations like yourselves need to design and create a better future for all. Let's jump straight in. Graham, so I'm delighted to have you here. We've been collaborating for a number of years. You, as a disclaimer, are a client. You know, I have done several pieces for Accenture over the years. But today we're going to be speaking a little bit more around the trends. When the trends, I know of from a very long time, former podcast host on This Is Hate City, Andy Pullane, was heavily involved. Did awesome work with that, along with Mark Curtis. So before we jump into the trends, though, and kind of, you know, talk only about trends, I want to learn a little bit more around you. Tell us a little bit about your background and what you do at Accenture Song.
Yeah, sure. So listen, thanks for having me, Jerry. Good to be on the podcast. And by way of introduction to myself, I mean, my current role is head of design with Accenture Song. I've been with Accenture for 7 years.
Right.
I came through the Fjord studio in the dock, which is Accenture's global center for innovation.
Yeah.
And I led a Fjord design team in there for about 4 years. And then after that, I moved into a sort of a new area in Accenture called Accenture Song.
Right.
And what Accenture Song really is it's a combination of all of Accenture's creative muscle and talent. You know, Rothko has now become Program 5, part of Accenture Song. We have our design team. We have our creative technology team. We have our customer service and customer transformation teams. We have content teams. And customer data analytics team. So Accenture Song really is bringing all of those muscles together, thinking about customer obsession and helping our clients understand how to design and create and communicate products and services and commercial propositions around customers today and tomorrow.
All right, very good. So the trends report, that's been going, I don't know how many years, I'm going to say 10 years. Is that roughly?
It's been going 17
years. 17 years, really?
17 years, yeah.
Okay, so that's around the start of Fjord then, whenever Fjord were...
When Fjord sort of kicked off about over 17 years.
2024 minus 17 equals...
I won't do the sums on the fly.
I know.
It's been going for 17 years. I've been involved in about 7 of them.
Okay.
And what's great about them is because everybody has trends. You know, lots of consultancies, lots of agencies will sort of publish their viewpoint on trends. What's unique about Accenture Life Trends is it's not done by a group of research bosses in a lab. Sometimes trends are published by maybe, you know, the brains of 5 people. What we actually do right across Accenture is we invite everybody in Accenture, from our, you know, consultancies to our, you know, innovation labs, Accenture Research, all of our design studios around the world, to sort of spot what signals we're seeing in terms of, you know, the intersection of human technology and business. We bubble up all of that site effectively into an editorial committee that sort of clusters all of that and then just boils it down to this year, most years, about 5 really compelling themes.
Okay.
So it's actually the product of the brains of, you know, probably around 2,000 people around Accenture, which is really good.
Yeah.
Great richness for it.
And is, like, I remember Mark Curtis, that name, was Mark, is he still kind of figureheading or spearheading the trends?
He still spearheads it. He's, you know, very passionate about
trends,
maintaining, you know, the essence of it, maintaining the fact that, you know, so many people contribute to it. And he's a huge, you know, his role as kind of leadership lead in Accenture is a huge part of the trends on the road and sharing that with our clients. We do that in Ireland an awful lot every year.
Yeah. So is my audio cutting in and out, by the way?
No,
it's not. It might just be Riverside and my cans. So as regards trends generally, like, you know, what does it give your clients and the people that read these? Like, I know it's an annual report, but what do people get out of it?
What people get out of it is a sense of what is evolving, what is changing, what is being reimagined or rethought. It's really is kind of future focused, but not too future focused. It's, you know, it's very actionable now.
Yeah.
And all sort of the themes and the trends people can look at and go, yes, I can see that emerging, or I'm hearing from a customer research, the voice of the customer work that we're doing, or I can see this start to hit news headlines globally, and it's becoming part of our consciousness. So what it gives us really is clues of what we need to be thinking about, what we need to be designing for tomorrow.
So I've had a peek, and I've had, you know, a kind of a guess before I got the peek. And I imagine AI, we need to have a buzz, you know, sound effect every time we say AI in this conversation, because it hasn't just arrived in the last 12 months. It's been bubbling up for a while, but it definitely feels like in the last 6, 12 months, maybe 18 months, it's kind of like hit kind of full force, and a lot of people are talking about it, and it's starting to have an impact in how people are working. Where does AI sort of intersect with the trends this year? What are your key pieces in that?
Yeah, I mean, we have 5 trends this year, and you're absolutely right. I mean, AI is slap bang in the middle of all of those. I think we've been talking about artificial intelligence for a very long time. I mean, we've been talking about artificial intelligence for, you know, over 20 years.
Yeah.
I think this year, particularly with the advent of generative AI, be another buzzword.
Yeah.
But generative AI really is where AI starts to come out of the analytics lab, or, you know, the backstage of an organization, and starts to come into the front stage, and actually employees and customers can start to push it, use it, see it deployed, and see it make meaningful change for them, which is why I think Gen AI particular lately has become much more prominent in terms of news headlines, in terms of conversations around workforce, in terms of conversation around brand content. It's a huge trend this year.
So let's talk about generative AI, because some people only know it as being AI. Okay. So there's different types of AI, and I'd love to hear your kind of thoughts and maybe the description of what generative AI is for the listeners out there, so they're able to articulate, saying, okay, they mightn't have ever really used a generative AI. So let's talk a little bit more around that. How are you seeing it being used by businesses, generative AI?
Yeah, so I mean, right now, today, right across Accenture and right across many of our clients, we're starting to see AI come into the workforce model.
Like, yeah,
that's happening now. I mean, if you look at Microsoft Copilot, which is effectively Microsoft's generative AI solution for the workplace, side by side with their digital workplace tools. What you're able to do now, and people are doing now in pilots right across Accenture, is imagine you got an email.
I'm looking at it now. Go on. Yeah.
Imagine you got an email and you're driving a car.
Yeah.
And, you know, rather than pull over on the road or rather than illegally take out your phone and start to read that email, the AI will read that email out to you. Well, that's great. That's,
that's handy.
You know, NLP.
Yeah.
But what you're able to do then is you're able to ask Copilot to effectively reply back to that email. You can give them some key prompts, which is, tell Jerry, thank you very much for his email. Can you be really polite in tone? And can you schedule a meeting or a call with me and Jerry at a time that's free in my diary, Wednesday or Thursday next week? And that will then effectively make all of that happen. And what's interesting about that is less about clicks and it's more about conversation.
Yeah.
And that's
contextual as well.
Exactly, and it's really, really contextual, because, you know, it's not just reply back in a very binary way that we used to with our fingers. It's tonal, it's be polite, it's
emotive.
Free Wednesday and Thursday of next week. It's, you know, acknowledge Jerry's needs and asks. So through conversation with these AIs, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be able to layer on more of what we need in terms of the action and the response, but also the AI is going to be learning off the back of that contextual data from us, because it's going to learn. For example, Graham and Jerry obviously have a relationship. Graham likes to normally be polite to Jerry. It's not a challenging response, because there might be another response that might be actually be more challenging here, be more assertive. So what the AI is learning off of, in order to anticipate the next time, just starts to become much richer.
Okay. You know? So it takes into consideration those previous conversations and the previous interactions.
Exactly. You know, equally, I can kind of go, okay, look, I need to present something in a meeting on Monday morning, prepare a PowerPoint presentation around trust and responsible ethics in AI. I want to do 10 slides, very visual, but I want to make these 5 points. That's now possible for you to execute. And that is your voice, that is your requirements, and that is a Copilot and effectively taking that task or job to be done and executing that for you.
Wow. So you're seeing businesses use this, you know.
It is a trial now right across the center. Many of our clients are now part of pilots or Copilot with Microsoft. It's happening.
Yeah. So tell me about some of the edge cases around, I don't even say edge cases, but some of the stories where it went wrong. Where are the risks on how this can actually not be misused, but sometimes not get the outcome that people are looking for?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the big sub-themes around generative AI, which is responsibility and ethics and trust.
Yeah.
Okay. Because if we're giving agency to these machines now to effectively take part of us and take many of the tasks that we used to do and effectively start to learn and become smarter as a result of that. That needs to be governed.
Yeah.
You know, right now, today, if you had an idea for a business, you could go to ChatGPT. You can get ChatGPT effectively to analyze the market for you. You can get ChatGPT to create the business plan, write the marketing strategy. You can go to another generative tool and you can get a logo and a brand identity. You can go to Microsoft Copilot and create your go-to-market deck looking for funding. And you can use, you know, for example, Adobe Firefly to create your entire static content, your video, so on. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
But actually, what does that mean for trust? Because what's interesting about what I've just described there is that's the potential to create a brand from nothing in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And if you think about brands, like a brand ultimately is a contract between a business and its customers. Is, you know, we're creating this product or service. People have been involved in it. Care has been involved in it. Regulations have been involved in it. Sometimes it takes over 100 years to create these things that we have in our homes. But now that can be done by a machine in 30 minutes.
Yeah, it's so scary.
New brands, new services, new products that are actually created through the lens of generative AI, can I trust them? Who's behind it?
Very much so. On the co-pilot conversation, like say in that scenario, you were driving your car and you said, send Jerry a response to this email. Instantly, my data has been used by the AI without my consent. So this bit, and it's funny how I hear myself speak about AI and the first thing that I go to, it's not a place of fear. It's more about around a place of really trying to dissect, you know, where the potential pitfalls are. So like suddenly Microsoft has now got my name and my email address, and then I'm speaking to another client. How does that AI then ensure that my data and the conversations that I'm having with one client and not another client, and they're able to kind of use that against me as a someone who hasn't consented into that that algorithm or that AI? And that's one of the conversations that I'm kind of really interested in understanding, the governance around the AI piece. Has that come up in the trends at all? Because it's great. It's like we're at the first stage of kind of like inception of these pieces into businesses. But the stage after that is when it starts going wrong and then they start reeling it back and they're like, what does that look like?
Yes. And I think that governance piece, that ethics piece is in some ways the counterpoint we need to design.
Like
3 weeks ago, European Parliament in Strasbourg ratified the first effectively governance and regulations around the use of artificial intelligence. And that's quite significant.
Yeah.
Because what that is going to create now is a momentum around responsible data usage and transparency around where AI is applied and how it's being applied, and also what you're leaving in terms of your data into the algorithm and the machine and the AI itself. So the regulation, I think what's significant about the regulation from Strasbourg is when social media came out 20 years ago, we didn't have anything like that.
No.
And we know what's happened, the use and application of social media over the last couple of years when it's unchecked.
Yeah.
Now AI, we've learned from that. And now European regulations is going to start. We have to figure out what does that mean for our
absolutely. I mean,
the data officer, what's the role of legal? We can't just go and play in this sandbox. We've got to actually design that governance and regulation into your organization and your teams.
And that has to be experimented, because the speed at which this has developed is like nothing we've seen before in terms of how it was adopted, but also how it's iterating. Can I ask you a question? This is going to, anyone of the listeners would be like throwing their eyes up to heaven. You know, here he goes. There's another one of these questions. How I see an AI, especially with Microsoft Copilot, is that there's an AI assistant. It's almost like Graham's personal assistant, but that's a standalone Graham AI. Okay. So in my argument there of, around the Microsoft Copilot, and you've got one big supercomputer of the one instance of the AI, is it right in saying that if it's a Graham AI and then you've got somebody else in Accenture, like a Shane AI, that they know each other, but they don't share that information? So is it a case of framing it like an extension of yourself, or do you know, is that data going back into that one big central repository of data and how it's being kind of cross-pollinated?
Yeah, I mean, there is a version where all of the data is
in one big box,
and we start to learn about many people's context, many people's preferences. But to be honest with you, Jerry, we're already doing that anyway with cloud. We're already doing that with social media. We're already doing that with search and email. So that's already happening. You're right, this is the next layer on top of that. And without the right data governance in place, that can go unchecked. That can get out of control.
Because I remember...
It all goes back to the data governance point.
Yeah, it does. And I remember I had a great conversation with Scott Jensen, who he was ex-Google and Apple as well at one point. And he's big in the FOSS space, like the free and open source software. And his kind of vision, not just his vision, but the vision of FOSS, the community of free and open source software, is that at some point, these big conglomerates, these massive organizations who are basically harvesting our data, at some point, the consumer will realize that they can run a lot of these instances and own their own data in an autonomous way. So that's where the question I was having was like, is it a case of like in the future? I know it's probably not, it's probably further down the track and it probably hasn't been in trends, and it's another one of my segues. But is it a case that in the future, generative AI could be, you know, seen as an extension of ourselves and not just giving all your data to Microsoft? And then I'm also using ChatGPT over here, and then I've got Bard or Google over here, that there's a case of having my own kind of instance of this running locally in my home. Is that something that you can see happening, or organizations having their own AI that's, you know, localized to their own business?
Absolutely. I think, you know, and one of the things that is starting to facilitate that and help that is organizations branding their own AI.
You know, very interesting.
Microsoft Copilot is a very clear articulation of that product and service, what its proposition is, what its right to be in people's lives is, what it can do for you, what it won't do for you.
Yeah.
So, you know, Copilot, Alexa.
Yeah.
That's a generative AI.
100%.
It's branded, it's humanized. But equally, what you've just alluded to there is organizations are using AI, but people are also using AI.
Yeah.
As an organization.
Yeah.
So, you know, instead of going to a search bar and saying, find me a black jumper, you know, find me a black jumper size XL that's made of this material, that's available for shipping in 24 hours.
Yeah.
And then it's sort of using that prompt to effectively search right across the internet.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Way. So the thing for designers to consider is we've kind of moved beyond click, buy, basket, search bar.
Yeah.
Into these kind of conversations that you can effectively
use
to in some ways go beyond just one Amazon or one Google and actually use
the internet,
large language models to get what you want.
Yeah.
It's no longer a case of just I want a black jumper. Like, this is actually what I want to do with that black jumper.
Yeah.
And now you have the power to actually find that solution for you. So we've moved beyond just that binary search.
Absolutely.
We've also moved beyond organizations just using data to now people actually using generative AI to solve their problems.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting. Like, and what you were talking there about is one organization having access to lots of different kind of sources of information. And I was in Miro's headquarters in Amsterdam a number of weeks ago, and they gave me a demo of how AI is being woven or weaved, not sure which was the right word there, into the platform, and how you can actually have your Atlassian Jira boards and you can have your Google Docs and your Google Sheets and all of these pieces, and how the AI is actually able to access that, process that, and determine some value out of it.
Absolutely.
Was mind-blowing. I mean, like, that there could have taken me 3 or 4 days. If you have to go through everything and kind of consolidate and synthesize and get some sort of insight out, and they were doing it in clicks, and I'm like, this isn't like, you know, in the future. This was in the browser, yeah, you know, happening contextual to the information that we all created in the demo. And it was kind of flawless.
Absolutely. I mean, we were experimenting with Accenture Song. You know, how do you rethink customer service and even the old concept of FAQs? You know, I mean, whenever people were put, you know, we were being pushed into these things called FAQs on websites.
Or the graveyards, as I call it, yeah.
Just to solve our own problem.
Yeah.
You know? But now you can rethink that and effectively use
something,
ChatGPT, to go and analyze that data set of the FAQs. And instead of just searching endless links and PDFs, the ChatGPT will actually come back to you with the thing that you actually want.
Yeah.
So that's going to change the customer service model. You know, you're going to be able to bring in an AI into a WhatsApp,
yeah,
with your friends, sort of to solve, where do we go to next weekend? And that conversation with your friends in the WhatsApp group with the AI can feel very real and natural. And
yeah,
I would solve that travel problem for you. I mean, that's the kind of stuff we're
it's pretty cool. I'm just picturing the future of me saying, I don't want to join a WhatsApp group. AI, can you join the WhatsApp group?
For me.
Be nice to Graham, but everyone else be condescending and patronizing.
So we can do that today.
Yeah.
Podcast.
And then Graham goes, I don't want to be nice to Jerry. send my AI to that WhatsApp group. Be condescending to Jerry, confuse his AI, and be nice to everybody else. And then it's just going
Maybe that's what's going on right now.
Well, do you know what? It wouldn't be too dissimilar to the school group on WhatsApp at the moment, that, like, you've just got hundreds and hundreds of messages from people, and yeah, I'm like, I don't know what's going on. So the sooner we eradicate that kind of scenario of, you know, mass communication and having to troll through it to get some sort of,
exactly,
relevant information, that's where it's going to be critical. Yeah. That's where it's going to be really, get rid of these notifications and it's contextual and saying, hey, listen, these are the bits you need to look at. That's where it'd be super powerful. Can I ask you another question on the trends? The AI stuff, we know, anyone listening to this will just be like, yeah, we knew that was going to be in there. But as regards the fear factor that comes with this, you know, for a long time, you know, we were saying, oh, the machines are going to take our jobs. I don't think that's a case of, like, they might take our jobs. They are taking our jobs, okay? Like, designers, I know from coaching and training people around the world that there's a lot of people out there currently who are now looking for work, okay? And the proliferation of AI, there's a severe correlation between the two. And I'm probably making an assumption there that is actually one of the precursors to this. It's devalued the role of the designer potentially in organizations. Is there anything in the trends this year that really alludes to the workplace and what impact this is going to have for kind of efficiencies, redundancies, and so forth? Because I know that is out there at the moment.
No, I mean, I think it's linked into the trust commentary that we have around generative AI. I don't necessarily share the same outlook that you have in terms of it's as black and white or as binary as AI will take our jobs. AI is taking tasks away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And sometimes jobs that are all about a task, yeah, that role might actually disappear. But in the same way, I think I said this to you before, the same way, about 40 years ago, when we all thought personal computers were going to come in and take our jobs, and, you know, computers would be doing everything that people in mail rooms or, you know, paper-based roles would have done. Actually, what it's done is it's created new roles. It's created new economies. It's created new ways of doing things at scale that you simply just couldn't do before. So I think we're probably in a moment where a lot of headlines are going around AI taking jobs. But I do think that's very narrow focused. What it's going to do is it's going to allow organizations to analyze the type of work that they historically have done. We're going to be able to identify, and we're doing this in Accenture with our clients today, which parts of those tasks can be supported by AI. But then what are the further opportunities for those people to do more at scale, faster, more creatively, using data much smarter? So I think that's the mindset to take, which is, yes, there are headlines out there, and AI may actually come in and remove some of the roles or tasks, but there's going to be so much more possibilities on the other side, because it's going to make so much more possible.
Hopefully, but I know maybe there's a different correlation, but a lot of people who are more senior have been kind of made redundant, and I'm trying to make the link between AI and that. I don't know if it's true or not, but I know some people out there who have messaged me saying, like, you know, there's definitely something happening here. But as regards freeing up, as you said, like the employees to make kind of more effective decisions, to get back onto the tools to make stronger impact and so forth. Is that really a belief that, you know, once we build the trust, that we're going to be in this position where things are going to be more possible?
Well, I mean, I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
Take the creative space, you know, where historically an art director or a copywriter would have to take a brief.
Yeah.
Research would have to be done. Concepts created. Photographers, production companies. It's a very lengthy process. Now, the role of a creative or a designer is probably going to change, and actually they're going to be able to use new tools that they'll be able to engineer an awful lot more themselves. So actually the designer is going to be doing much more prompt engineering. Which AI tools do I use to create this design? So actually I think it gives creative people much more agency.
Yeah.
And choice and speed, by the way.
Yeah.
You know?
It's definitely
actually exciting.
It is, like, for me as an independent, I use it sparingly, actually. I use it at certain points where I feel like it might help. Like the platform that we're recording on here now, they have a really clever automation piece that sits behind the podcast creation, where it'll automatically transcribe as we're speaking here. So I get a transcription of the full episode. It'll do my show notes and so forth. It is fantastic that they're as an independent. But I wonder, you know, as a consultancy, where the risks are there with the relationship with the clients, who, you know, historically consultancies have, you know, sold on time, sold on effort. How does this shift that relationship now that the clients can access these AIs and they can potentially do some of the things that you were doing using the AI? How is that going to shift the relationship, do you feel?
I think it'll shift commercially, it'll shift more towards value.
Yeah.
And outcomes.
Oh, brilliant. I mean, that's
time.
Yeah.
And people. And we're already doing that, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, an awful lot of our conversations with clients now are based on that. I think it's going to change the tools that we can bring.
Yeah.
Which is actually going to help differentiate the people.
Yeah.
And the consultancies and the agencies who are actually leaned into AI. I can use it to make more possible and also kind of change the commercial model as well.
The business model, yeah.
You know, so yeah, I think that's you've used the word you're in love. That's where you have to approach this with the mindset, which is, am I holding on to the past, approaching this with fear, or am I actually being optimistic about it and seeing it could actually change my business model and change the way of doing things?
Yeah.
And that's exciting.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing to tune into.
Absolutely. Now imagine, Graham, we were out for dinner and, you know, people said to you like, oh, Graham, you work for Accenture and you've done the trends. You know, they'd say, what are the other pieces, the top three pieces other than AI that you're kind of most interested in, you're most kind of eager to talk about from your own perspective, not Graham, head of design in Accenture Ireland, but just Graham, like, what were the bits that you kind of feel like this is something worth chatting about?
Well, I think there's two other trends that really hit me this year. And the other one, I think, segues nicely from the AI conversation we just had, is and it was quite a surprise to see this emerge in the trends this year, but there's a big thought around organizations have sort of stepped away from customer obsession.
Yeah.
Sort of because of hard economics, there's a little bit of love lost between organizations and their customers.
And
it's sort of evidenced in a number of really human things that I think you and your listeners will just nod when I outline them. Shrinkflation is becoming a thing. All right. And if you know anybody who sort of probably would time me because we've just done this after Easter, but the whole narrative around chocolate bars are not the same size as they were.
What?
When we were kids.
I thought my hands had just got bigger. What are you talking about?
Some of our products have actually shrunk in size.
Is this, because this is something that I've been saying for a long time at home. Yeah. I'm like, when I was a child, my packet of crisps were big. I knew they'd shrunk, but do you have any more information on how much they've shrunk by?
I don't have these.
Oh, come on. You don't start a conversation.
What I can tell you,
throwing allegations out to Cadbury's.
I can tell you, Springfield, you know the retailer Carrefour?
Yeah.
So they're actually labeling products that are coming in shrunk versus what we used to be years ago.
Really?
Carrefour is a retailer. I've noticed that their suppliers, and imagine that retailer-supplier relationship, how close that needs to be. Here's the retailer actually saying, no, hang on a second, this product has come in, it's lighter, less, they are putting a label on it.
You're like, I know there's something about this banana, I can't put my finger on it, but it still tastes like
banana.
But what's going on? Like,
it's because of hard economics.
Yeah.
You know, we've had
the resources.
We've had to sort of pull back, and also the cost of materials, cost of supply.
Yeah.
But actually, the things that might have been 100 grams years ago are now less. Another thing around the customer obsession or the lack of it is, you know, skimflation. You know, you walk into a restaurant, you walk into a hotel, or you walk into any sort of service organization, there's less there on the floor. There's less people at the counter. You know, have you ever hired a car recently?
Yeah, till last week.
You just look at it and go, there needs to be more people here because, you know, there's
one person.
News happening. One person doing both returns and collections. The other thing around customer obsession is pricing.
Yeah,
we're starting to see this thing, the increase of surge pricing, you know, surge pricing, which we typically saw in the airline industry. There are now bars in London who are surge pricing their beer based on the time of day and week.
So if you go to
a bar in London on a Tuesday, you might pay £6 per pint. Mm. If you go to that same bar on a Saturday, it's £8. Mm. And that surge pricing now coming out of just the airline industry and being applied to lots of other categories.
Ticketmaster, another one. Ticketmaster do that as well. Surge by demand.
Exactly. Exactly, you know. And then the other thing is subscriptions. So there's now a car company in Germany who are launching a subscription if you want to turn the heater on your seats.
What?
So when you look at all these signals, yeah. What's happening now is it's a tough economic climate for our clients. There are choices being made now around the customer experience model. Cost is being taken out of it, and customers are seeing that. And what that is ultimately going to test is what we would call the elasticity of forgiveness. Because there's a point where people just go,
no more.
No more.
Can I just hang on that point for a second? I own the car. Is that right? And you're saying that
you own the car.
And if I want to have my seats heated, I need to have a subscription.
$4.99 for
who? Subscription with who? Why?
The car.
But like a Toyota or something. If I want to heat the cars, I have to pay extra for it.
It could any of those nuts.
Why?
Because they're looking for more ways to make money.
I just find it really crazy. Yeah. You own the car outright.
But you need to subscribe to a feature in the car. Yeah.
To unlock it.
I mean, I own my laptop. The search engine comes free.
Yeah.
But the subscription for the cloud is extra.
Yeah.
Now, other organizations are learning from that SaaS type model and bringing some of these prices.
If you'd like to use the space bar on your laptop, you have to take a subscription out.
Sorry?
If you want to use the space bar on your laptop, you need to take a subscription out.
A little bit like that. So, you know,
yeah, it's crazy.
The signals that our studios around the world are starting to see. And we're starting to see it in voice of customer feedback as well. They're spotting it.
Wow. Sometimes on podcasts I get speechless. That one there has just rendered me utterly dumbfounded and speechless. Because I drive, you know, with a little bit of heat on my back, because my back is always stiff. I'm getting to that age, middle age, where I like it. Like the thoughts of my car company doing that. As you said, the elasticity of forgiveness. I would just be like, no. This isn't something I'm interested in. I've been doing it for so long at this stage.
Yeah.
So it's really going to test us an awful lot more. Now,
there is a subreddit which I can share with you.
Please do. We'll put it in the show notes.
Thousands of people talking about various different examples of this lack of customer obsession.
Yeah.
I'll find it and share it with
you. Yeah. Please do, Graham. With the trends. I remember I have a couple of them here in my bookshelf over here, but it is now digital. Is that correct? So you've got digital versions of the trends that people can access. Is that right?
Absolutely. They're completely there to be accessed by anybody. I can share the link with you. You can share it with your listeners.
It's definitely worth...
I know you used to like the books. You used to like the hard paper books.
Graham emailed me about this. I go, yeah, just send me the book first. And you're like, we don't do the book anymore for sustainability reasons. Yeah, there's two sides of that conversation, which I won't get into, but Jerry McGarvin would definitely have something to say to you about running it digitally versus physically. But with the digital link, is that, do you have to enter a password or anything to get it? I know some of our listeners,
no,
whenever
I've
done that before. It's open.
Anybody can access them? Yeah, we have them.
Open. Yeah. So one last thing, and I know Accenture, as I said, they're our client folks. There is a relationship there, but I have got carte blanche in what I can ask Graham today. It's not one of those scripted conversations. In terms of your role at Accenture Ireland, I know from training that the team has grown and continues to grow. And like every organization around the world, they say they really struggle with finding great people. This is a chance to give a shout out if there's people out there who are looking to work, who I believe are one of the best design teams in Ireland. And you know, they do an awful lot of great work. Again, I'm lucky I get to see and speak to a lot of designers. What's the situation like? Are there opportunities opening up in the team in Accenture Ireland?
Yeah, I mean, I think we would advertise publicly on Accenture Careers and open roles. We would also work closely with partnerships the UX Design Institute.
Okay, yeah.
We obviously bring people in, and they might intern with us. And actually, two people who interned with us have been successful and gone full time as well, which is a brilliant story.
Yeah.
And then we also like to just welcome designers in if they want to hang out. So we have this vehicle called the Design Chapter. And what it does is it sort of links up all of our designers across Accenture. So we have designers in Accenture Song, we have designers in Accenture Technology, in our Avanade business group, designers in Droga 5 as well. So some of our people set up a design chapter. And actually, one of the things that we do is we've got about 70 people in that chapter right across Accenture. They meet up regularly, share design stories. And we're actually inviting students from the University of Maynooth in to join us, hang out for a day and listen to some of those talks as well. So if anybody wants to participate in our design chapter, dial into any of our calls. If they want to reach out to you, Jerry, you can.
I'll connect you. I'm happy to connect. I'm always happy to be the middleman. At the Maynooth University, I interviewed John Foley, who's an ex-graduate of that that program at Maynooth. They do brilliant stuff. From speaking to John, they're one of the places that I recommend in Ireland for really solid strategic design. Like they really got it. Like John was a remarkable designer. He was at LiveWork in London. Still think he's over there. But that'd be brilliant for the students of Maynooth to get in and experience what I call the nightclub in Smithfield, the studio. It's just a super cool space.
It's
the drum kit. No one really plays the drum kit, Graham. And I've been in there so often and I'm looking, is there something that the drum kit ever gets played?
I have never actually seen the drum kit being played.
No.
As a bass player myself, I'm just aiming for someone.
Well, do you know what? You can get an AI drum machine now. You can get an AI drum machine.
AI drum machine, Jerry.
You know, and I want the Seinfeld theme tune played the next time I come into the studio. So played by you, not by an AI. Graham, I'm going to throw a link to your LinkedIn as well because, you know, it is a great way to connect with people and, build a network as well around this conversation especially. Is it okay if people reach out to you if they've got any questions? Or they want to start?
Always good to make connections and...
Graham, listen, look, thanks so much for your time today. I'll put a link to the trends in the show notes or the description if you're watching on YouTube. And we'll have to get you back on the next time the next trends come out, Graham. Thanks again.
Jerry, an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for your time.
No worries, man.